Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Economics Design Podcast. My name is Ari Kimmelman, and today I'm joined by my colleague, Enzo Martin, a consultant here at Economics Design. Thanks for joining me, Enzo.
My pleasure, Ari. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure as well. So for today's podcast, I'd like to discuss two papers that you've written on the intersection of traditional economics and Web3 game economy design. The articles, which will be linked below, are titled What Game Developers Can Learn from Government Policies and The Role of Government in Gaming Economics. So to begin the conversation, could you explain how blockchain technology relates to economics in the context of Web3 gaming?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess the most common misconception is that blockchain tech allows the emergence of these economies to exist, but actually it promotes the easier facilitation of the transfer of value between agents in these economies. So I say that because these virtual economies have been existing even before blockchain games existed or blockchain tech existed. So basically, the emergence of this technology just makes it easier to transfer cryptocurrencies, to transfer values between people, rather. And yeah, because of that digital ownership that tech allows us to have. So basically, there's already research done by Edward Castronova, Hiroshi Yamaguchi, and many other scholars in this space. And basically, markets are created because of opportunity cost. So opportunity cost is the cost of a particular activity given the value or benefit that's being given up when engaging in that activity relative to doing a different activity in itself. So to put things into perspective, basically you can't be at two places at once. Either you go to this concert or you stay at home and relax, right? You can't do both, especially if it's at the same time. So basically, this is what makes the market a market. And essentially, and in these virtual economies. So if you think about it, like if your first activity is to play a game and your next activity is to work, basically that's the whole trade-off that you have. And that's the opportunity cost that you get. So for example, if you earn like $100 from an hour of work that you do, basically, if you choose to play a game instead of doing your work, you're losing out on that $100 that you earn, right? So the rational person would be like, oh, I would rather go to work than play this game because I'm earning like $100 as opposed to earning nothing but maybe utility in that by playing that game. And this is like in the Web 2 context of things. But like right now, of course, even through Web 2 games, like there are people who made a living out of it. There are people who earn money out of it. And that's by like grinding these characters and selling it in the secondary markets or third party markets for basically cash equivalents, right? But there's lots of risks there. So basically those who do that have, how should I say? Maybe they don't earn as much as $100 per hour spent. Basically, they earn more by playing these games and selling them off to other people than if they would like go to work instead. So maybe they have less earthly responsibilities. They earn less. Probably they earn like $25 an hour. And these are just like really rough numbers. So basically, their opportunity cost from working is lower than that if they would rather play the game. So as rational beings, they would rather play the game. And blockchain tech basically makes that market, the facilitation of the transfer of value between those two market agents, those who are able to grind and sell these characters to those who don't have the time to play and would rather work. Blockchain tech adds that easy facilitation of the transfer of value between those two agents. So basically in Web2 games, developers just quote-unquote rent it out, like rent out the digital assets to the players. If you read the fine print, essentially you don't own these assets. They're still owned by the Web2 game. So technically you cannot sell them. And for games, like for most Web 2 games, especially MMORPGs, they actually frown upon the using third-party websites to sell these accounts. And there's a lots of risks involved with that as well. Like, I read an article where this one kid sold the same account like 20 times. So there are like 20 different people who played that one account. And of course, that's of fraud in a way, right? And it's risky. So basically, blockchain's digital ownership prevents that from happening and makes it easier to transfer the value between two market agents. And basically, that's the whole, that's how it relates to the context of economies in Web3 gaming as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that makes sense. And there's something I want to also point out that sometimes I hear, which is people not necessarily understanding why blockchain technology and ownership of assets matter when you can have marketplaces found within a game. So if it's a trading card game, for example, right? They have these existing marketplaces where people can already buy and sell their assets between people. So how does blockchain technology take that to an extra level beyond the in-game marketplaces?
Yeah, I mean, of course, like blockchain tech, like it's all written in the smart contracts. It's all in the code that, for example, this particular card in that marketplace, you can only have like 25 pieces of that particular item, right? For that particular NFT. So everyone knows, okay, there's only 25 pieces of this particular NFT. Then if the community really values that card, if it's a really strong card, if it's a really desirable skin, then the value of that skin would increase, as opposed to when it's just the regular kind, like in the Web2 game, where of course the developers could easily just create their own asset and just flood the market with it. It won't be as valuable. It won't be as easy to create that scarcity in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. So I want to go into the topic of the emergence of businesses within these games. So I'm wondering from your perspective, firstly, why are you passionate about Web3 games?
Okay, so for me, I'm really passionate about these Web3 games because I'm a big gamer. Like, I've been playing video games. I've been playing MMORPGs even as a kid. And like, if you've heard of games like Ragnarok or Fly for Fun, Fly here in Asia, basically they were the MMORPGs that were popular when I was young. And basically we had this concept called pilots where I actually paid some of those people who stayed in the internet cafes or like work in the internet cafes to level up my character while I was in school. So like I would save up my allowance and use that to pay them so they could play my account so that I won't get left behind by my guildmates who don't go to school, basically, who live by playing the game. And like that whole concept, basically it's the first maybe manager scholar relationship that we see in Web3 gaming now, but it's really the like grinding or the adventures of playing video games, and you would kill a monster, you would farm for these items, or you would look for that rare item and sell it on the marketplace. That's how I got introduced to economics. So basically I'm passionate about Web3 gaming because it's a full circle for me. Games got me into economics, and economics basically got me back into Web3 gaming, and I could apply it to Web3 gaming in a more facilitated manner. And basically, it's while the industry is young, it also helps grow. I mean, I can also help grow the industry as well. So that's really one aspect of why I'm really passionate about this space.
So, for example, we've seen in Axie Infinity, we've seen, you know, land sales, we've seen land sales in Sandbox and Decentraland, and actually some quite interesting things happening where the policymakers or the game developers are making changes or have made changes around the rules of the land. And then what happens as a result is actually fluctuation in the price or the value of that land, such as if you can transport more quickly from one location to another, then the value of, you know, the land of being a part of a specific location goes down if it's a good location. I want to talk about cryptocurrency. So let's talk about cryptocurrencies in games. In the past year or two, we've seen a couple of different models with trying to incorporate cryptocurrencies. We've seen different types of token models. We've seen games with simply just NFTs in them, which could be, for example, like skins. And we've seen a combination between the two. We've participated in discussions before about what should be on chain, what should be off chain, meaning what parts of the game should be, you know, part of blockchain technology and what other parts shouldn't be part of that technology. And so it's been a discussion for quite a long time now. And so reflecting on what makes a good game and what the value of a cryptocurrency in a game is, I think we should maybe flesh out this point a little bit more. So, Enzo, do you want to share some brief advantages and disadvantages of including a cryptocurrency within a game at all? And for someone, for example, who's just a Web2 gamer, why on earth is there a crypto in a game?
Yeah, so for that, I would say, like, whatever I'm going to say next isn't really, like, the best way. Like, if you have crypto as your in-game token, it's great. If you don't have it, it's also great as well. Like, there are pros and cons for both. And it really depends on how you develop your economy to know which route to take, right? So I want to lead off with that. But if, like, a game would have cryptocurrency as its in-game token, the main advantage I would say is that there's direct accessibility, mainly due to that fiat conversion that's possible. Like, if it's crypto, if it's on-chain, basically you can put it on a marketplace, you can put it on a decentralized exchange and or a centralized exchange, and there would always be that direct fiat conversion of whatever cryptocurrency you would have, right? So I guess that's one way of, like, applying or seeing that real-world value inside of that game while you play. Like, for the moment you grind, the moment you kill that particular monster, it drops some certain gold coin. And if those gold coins are cryptocurrencies, when you check on, like, Binance or other centralized exchanges in your area, or exchanges in your area rather, you would see, oh, okay, I've made this much already. And it would be the same if, like, you would sell a particular item, drop, that's, let's say, an NFT, you sell it on the marketplace, you have that general idea of, okay, I think this is, for example, $50. And then you would know how to price it in terms of whatever cryptocurrency or token you would have in that ecosystem. And I think the next main advantage is, of course, digital ownership. Like, that's the main value add that blockchain gives in terms of Web3 games as well, in my opinion, at least, mainly because that we would know, like, whoever has this particular amount of money, we know through the blockchain itself that it's always that particular amount of money, right? Like, at least right now, right, there's no way to hack that system, as opposed to, like, when you're a really, really great coder or whatever, like, you could, if you were able to hack a particular game in order to, like, have a cheat code or something that suddenly increases those in-game token drops, then that would be hard to do, because in this particular, like, for cryptocurrencies, it's on-chain. Like, everything's there, everything's accounted for. So that's one added advantage. I would say also that it's not all advantages for that. There are still risks involved, mainly in terms of volatility, because even though you don't want it publicly traded, if the economy would see that they want it to be traded publicly, they could essentially gather as much of that token as they can and just list it themselves on an exchange, right? And I've seen this, I think, I'm not sure, but I think for that blockchain token for Axie Infinity, RON, I remember they don't have an officially released partner with any exchange for that particular cryptocurrency, but somehow it ended up on other exchanges as well. So that's basically something that I would say you're not really avoiding. You can't really avoid that volatility in terms of how the market would react to your token. If it's a cryptocurrency, basically it could be traded. And basically that's, if it could be traded, then it could really be subject to certain volatilities of the crypto market in itself. Basically, this is, I wouldn't say really problematic, but just really a risk, because in-game currencies should be more or less stable if you want to use it as a medium of exchange. So again, it goes back to what are the uses of your in-game token first? And then you would see, like, how a cryptocurrency would help in your goals of establishing it as your in-game token, or if it won't. But at the end of the day, basically, game devs, if you go the cryptocurrency route, game devs have the power to create mechanisms that really promote stability within their economies and basically to mitigate those external shocks when they happen.
Yeah, so I think that's interesting. And what you said reminded me of one or two things. So from the perspective, I guess, as a game developer, I would say also to add on to what you said, one of the advantages, let's say we take an MMO, for example, is if you have a bunch of buying and selling within a game, you can essentially make some money if you can take a small tax out of the plethora of exchanges or buying and selling behaviors that occur, right? And so you can't necessarily do it to the same degree without a cryptocurrency. And so I think, for example, the reason Star Atlas has an in-game token is really to capture that exchange of value and take a piece of it for the developers or to continue to develop the game. And one other thing which I think is interesting is a trend that we've seen for games with in-game tokens that are cryptocurrencies is typically some form of, some type of curve in which, they're emitted, or also what we're seeing is a specific amount of token that's being emitted on a monthly basis, a weekly basis. And that's essentially to reduce the amount of people who are trying to extract from the economy. So there's different types of solutions that are being at play here. And I wouldn't say we necessarily have a solution at the moment. I think that different games, even games that are currently in development, like Guild of Guardians, for example, it's a single game token and they have a great team behind the game. And they're going to try to work on this bonding curve and see if they can create a successful in-game token. And similarly speaking, we're seeing games which are doing, I'd say, somewhat different, like Star Atlas, which is, your governance token, which is, there's an argument for the pros and cons of that in itself. Maybe we can get into that a little bit later.
Thoughts on that is that economies are different from one another. Like, they're really unique. They're living and breathing beings in itself, I would say. But basically, there's no one blanket solution that fits all economies in that sense, right? Or all blockchain projects. Like, it really depends on what unique game features you would have in place for that particular economy. And then you would develop a lot of different mechanisms that would make that game feature work, right? So basically, and of course, going back to what I said earlier, volatility is also going to be a problem. Like, even though you prepare for all these market scenarios to happen, you can't really predict when they will happen. You can't really predict if they would happen and what else could have happened, right? So similar to real world economies, basically governments in the form of game devs in this sense really have to play, are really reactionary to what the market is doing, because they cannot really predict what the market will do in the future, or how they will behave given certain new updates and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, there are a lot of different projects with different kinds of token models, and yeah, it's really unique, and that's what makes the industry interesting.
Yeah, and so you mentioned there that there's different instances depending on the economy design where it might make sense to have certain type of model versus another. I think we should walk through one example for our listeners to really have a better idea of how that would work. So let's take Shrapnel, for example. The economics design team has worked with the Shrapnel team, and I was mentioning this on a previous podcast, that in Shrapnel, more or less, assets are not minted out of thin air. It's typically, if someone is winning game in-game assets, it's because you're losing your in-game assets. And it creates this zero-sum situation in games. And Shrapnel also includes a cryptocurrency within their game. And so they're able to create, in this instance, for example, a model in which we find a way to have NFTs not be inflationary, a cryptocurrency not be inflationary. And what they also do, which I think is interesting, and you can jump in here in a moment, is they create a barrier. So this is, for example, a topic that's discussed in virtual economies design and analysis. And they basically have like a price ceiling and a price floor, so that if, for example, the price of an NFT goes above or below a certain point, the game developers will automatically buy and sell those NFTs to ensure it stays within that price range. We've seen some examples of useful instances of tokens and NFTs within games. So how can we leverage our understanding of economics to continue to build these models? And what can we take away from traditional economics?
Yeah, so basically there, in terms of that Shrapnel example, one thing I liked about it is because when we were really formulating the different ideas during that discussion, it's really taking what they want to happen and like what their idea of it. And that in this case, they really wanted that particular price range to happen, and so that it's really accessible to the players. Like, you don't price out particular new players in the market, which is what happened to Axie Infinity when it increased, right? I mentioned earlier as well, like when a lot of people demanded it, but then supply wasn't enough, essentially, the prices went up to adjust for that, to correct for that difference in inventory, quote-unquote inventory, right? So basically, they didn't want that particular scenario to happen. So, but you can't just overinflate your market as well. So basically, what we did in just in that particular discussion is we really took the different lessons or theories, laws of economics, and really made sure that when we were developing that model, it would make sense from a theoretical standpoint, from an application standpoint, and we would already try to foresee what like possible problems can happen. And we also prepared some safeguards just in case those particular scenarios would be reached as well. And it's not like a one-time thing that we just thought of it as well. Like, we really developed it. It's a continuous reiteration. It was a continuous discussion throughout that whole process, similar to basically how laws are crafted in different countries. Like, there's a certain debate that's going to happen to really poke holes into this particular concept, into this particular train of thought, so that all angles would be covered. And basically, that's the same, how should I say, same mechanic or same thing we did when we were designing this particular economy. So I would like, if I would say, for like other game devs who were listening to this podcast as well, is really have a solid foundation of like at least economists in your team, so that basically everything that would follow economic law would be sound when you create your model as well.
Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. And I want to ask you a question about some of the information you included in your articles. So you made some relationships between traditional economics and Web3 gaming economics. I'm wondering if you could explain those in a little bit more detail for our listeners.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, when I was first starting, I always had this analogy of, okay, a Web3 game could be compared to a country. And I thought basically I was the only one who had that analogy. But as I met more people in the space, they use that same analogy over and over again. So why is that? Basically, because Web3 games have an economy that is basically, they're a market. And a market is basically where the transfer and trade of value happens. And where in the real world, where does that happen? It happens in regional economies, in countries, in cities, in provinces, basically. You can zoom in or zoom out as much as you want, but basically each of those entities are markets where the value is traded and transferred between one agent to another. When you purchase food, when you purchase services inside like your country, basically there is that transfer of value happening. And what's interesting is, like I mentioned, each Web3 project is unique, and they would have, there's no one blanket solution for all of the projects to happen, right? It's the same for regional economies. Like, of course, the Philippines, where I'm from, is different from Canada, where you are. Mainly, we're in two different parts of the world. We have different trees, we have different resources available, different plants grow in our area, different animals live in our habitats. So if I would say, okay, maybe the price of fish should be the same in the Philippines and in Canada, but we have more fish. So basically, how would that happen, right? Basically, we're undercutting the prices of fish in your area if that's the case. So basically, these economies are, again, living and breathing entities. And comparing a Web3 game economy to a regional economy makes sense in that aspect, at least as a first way of understanding how these Web3 game economies work, right? So basically, it's again, it's a really young field, it's a really young industry, but we have something similar already. We've studied this for a really, really long time. We have like scholars have iterated on various theories and various laws, especially in the field of economics as well. So why not use the learnings that we have here and apply it to this young field that we have called the Web3 gaming space? And basically, that's the whole concept of why I like to compare it to like regional economies in the real world as well. And there's really lots of similarities. Like, your governments are your game devs, but in Web3 economies, they're not just the government, basically. They're also God, right? They can create anything out of thin air that's something unique to them, but not in the real world, right? We mentioned like there could be import and export as well, where basically people who want to get out of the economy or get out, leave the Web3 game, maybe they got bored, maybe they don't want to play it anymore. If they want to leave, basically they have to extract funds out of the economy and leave the system. So it's like immigration, right? What that fund, and like some people will say that this fund is still in the blockchain. So why not try a different game instead, right? So you would have that migration of citizens in a way from one economy to another. You can have also dual citizens where they're really playing two different games all the time. And yeah, so there's lots of similarities as well when it comes to that. And that's why I really like to make that analogy, especially when trying to study the space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's a brilliant idea. I mean, obviously, it's true that it's not exactly an apples to apples comparison. There are obviously differences. But the reality of the situation is there's a lot of strong economic theory that can be applied to virtual economies. And there are relationships. And sisters, you know, you mentioned opportunity cost and supply and demand curves and price floors, price ceilings. These are all kind of basic econ terms, all being applied constantly. To people who are game economy designers, game economists, people who are developing and building these economies. So it's a very, very cool thing. And it's a new application of economics, relatively speaking, a new application that even in my experience, a lot of economists aren't really that familiar with.
Yeah, that's the fun part of it, right? Like when I took up my master's, I really made it a point, okay, like when I was thinking of what thesis I would do, I didn't want it to be just doing a thesis that has been done, but applying it to the Philippines. Like, and that has been done over and over again, like just different time periods. Like, I want something to be new. I want something to be helpful. I want to be one of the first people or the first person to actually like a breakthrough in that particular field. Like, even though I'm using old theories, old laws, but they're laws for a reason. We've been studying this. We've been teaching this to generations and generations of economic students, mainly because it still holds, right? So why not use that to really understand how this new market would work? And that's really the whole, I think, what's cool about what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, I completely agree. Very exciting. And so thanks for coming on the podcast today. It was great to have you.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Ari. Would love to be back and would love to talk more about this.
Yeah, happily. Okay, thank you, everyone.